What I'd like to talk to you today is some of the new work we are doing, you know, to develop or to estimate genetic coefficients for DSAT crop models. And today I'm going to share with you a case study that we have done with series maize. Though I'm going to talk about series maize, the technique is general enough so it can be applied to any linear or non-linear model. This technique also doesn't limit itself for just for the genetic coefficients. It can be applied for any kind of parameters that are used by any of these kind of models. So it's a very a general procedure. Now, our motivation to do these things, while we already have for DSAT and through other people, there are different methods to estimate genetic coefficients. But we still wanted to revisit that because as we are getting into the application of climate forecast to make the decision for the next season, we would like to be as current as possible with the varieties that our farmers are using it. And what we noticed that availability of the genetic coefficients for this cultivar is the most important and the first step before even we can begin to use the model. Secondly, the large number of cultivars are released every year, both by private companies and by state agencies. And if we want to use them, we need to have the genetic coefficients available as soon as the experiments are ending. And the current processes are kind of arbitrarily, they are iterative, and often requires a lot of prior information before this technique can be used. And using this particular approach, the Bayesian likelihood method, we want to minimize some of these overheads. And another character of the current methods is that they all strive to find a single optimal value for a genetic coefficients. And this is mainly because the basic need is to produce a unique result for the end users. Whereas if the genetic coefficients have variability, then your output will be also variable. And currently, DSAT models are not ready to use the distribution of genetic coefficients, but we hope that can be changed. And you saw the previous presentation of computing soil water by doing an inverse problem. The other things we see that it is really very difficult to find a unique solution to do a reverse engineering, and I'll demonstrate how that's possible. Now, often there are very limited data sets available to apply this kind of techniques, and in this case, the only two values we had available were yield and days to anthesis. And using these two inputs, we had to estimate six genetic coefficients which are required by series maize. Of course, all the management information was available in this case. So the objective of this research is to use this general likelihood uncertain estimation or GLU method along with the series maize to do for estimate the probability distribution of six genetic coefficients simultaneously, not one at a time, for any new hybrid, and which is conditioned on by minimizing the errors between yield and the days to silking that's available. And then the second objective is to investigate whether the growth management, whether it's an irrigated crop or rain-fed crop, makes any difference in estimated values. Because many genetic coefficients are defined to work under optimum conditions, and that typically means no water stress. But in reality, the data, most data sets are available are under rain-fed conditions. So this that's why the second hypothesis was added there. Now, like other methods, to use this method, we also need to know some idea about what the range of the genetic coefficients are. So we looked at the current release of DSAT, which has over 100 varieties in it that are calibrated over years. And by looking at the values of these 6 genetic coefficients, we calculated the mean and the standard deviation of this. And we tested this using Anderson-Darling test, and we find that most of these values do follow approximately normal distribution. And having this assumption of normality helps, but it's not necessary. Yeah. In fact, in a broader paper, I've also shown that using a uniform distribution, just the minimum and maximum value or a range of a parameter is even much better than having this kind of distributions. Now, the basic idea in this glue method is to find the root mean square error or some kind of error estimate between observations and simulation using certain set of genetic coefficients. Unlike other methods which work on individual genetic coefficients, glue method works with an entire set, all 6 genetic coefficients at one time. And so in this notation, what this symbol here is the simulated yield using one such set of 6 genetic coefficients. And then this method calculates a likelihood function, which is basically the difference between the actual value and the simulated value. The closer the two are, you have a higher likelihood. And to look across many values, this likelihood is normalized by finding the minimum value of this error over a large set of simulations. And once this is done, it then calculates weights, and based on these weights, then the weighted mean and the variance is calculated. So using these two, both the distribution for the genetic coefficients as well as the uncertainty in the output can be measured. This is an example of how this procedure works. Using the earlier knowledge of genetic coefficients, if you generate the yields, you get a kind of a broad distribution ranging all the way from almost zero to about 20,000 kilos per hectare. Whereas these dots were the observations during the 10 years of the variety of trial data. When we apply the glue method, it reduces the acceptable values out of all these sets and creates a new distribution which has a much closer mean to the observed data, but the variability was not there. And this is just using the yield measurements. Once the anthesis was also added, it even did a much better job in estimating the variability in the yields. Now, again, this is the initial distribution of this one coefficient called P1, which measures when the plant becomes photoperiod sensitive, and when the glue was applied, it reduced its variability and also gave a much higher probability of finding the mean value. Now, this is another look at the previous slide, whether the bars were the observed yield and this dots, black dots, were the mean yield simulated with initial distribution, and the whiskers being the 95% confidence interval. And what you can see, the uncertainty in the simulated values was considerably high because we used a very large wide distributions. But when the glue was applied, the uncertainty was reduced and the means were almost identically simulated for all the years and not just the mean values. But then you notice that the days to antithesis in this case was almost 80 plus days, whereas this particular variety silks in about 60 days. The difference between the silking and the maturity was approximately right, about 55 to 60 days. But the silking was predicted to be late. Again, when we added the antithesis, then not only the yields were simulated correct, but also the days to silking and the days to maturity were simulated right. So using just two sets of input data, we could estimate the six genetic coefficients. This is a summary of the genetic coefficient. This is the initial distribution, for example, for P1, whereas this is the final distribution that came up. Now, in this table, I have also added the same, applying the same techniques to non-irrigated trials. And what I saw was that the genetic coefficients that were simulated for non-irrigated treatments were generally smaller than those for the irrigated treatments. So, which seems right. And so, when people use rain-fed treatments to estimate genetic coefficients, you are not likely to get the optimum yields right. And this is in summary. Once we apply the glue method, the parameter space becomes increasingly constrained as more data is taken into account. Another beauty about this glue method is, once, for example, in this variety of trials where the hundreds of varieties are grown each year, so we can apply this technique without having to rerun the simulations again. So that way it produces enormous savings in time and the computing resources compared to any other method. Another beauty about this method is that when we looked at the current values of, say, these two coefficients, P2 and P1, you don't see any correlations among them. But once the glue method is applied, you see that this P1 and, for example, this phylochron interval are strongly correlated. And this is a compensating mechanism in series maze, because when you have a low values of phylochron interval, it tends to produce large number of leaves, and if you have a large number of leaves, it would delay days to silking. And this also shows that in many current models which simulate or which calibrate one coefficient at a time, you can imagine if you start with a lower value of P1, of phylochron interval, you will end up with a high value of P1. Whereas if you start with a high value of phylochron interval, you will come up with a low value of P1. So it's important that these things need to be looked as a set and not as an individual values. So in summary, the feature of this is that this method seems, at least all the tests that we have done, is much more efficient than, for example, the GenCalc, which is a method that we have included with the DSAT. This method can be used for any type of model, for any type of parameters, either it's a linear or a non-linear, and most importantly, it requires only few data points. I think it's intuitive to understand and is computationally less demanding compared to simulated annealing or the GenCalc method. The drawback is that in this approach, it assumes that we at least have some prior knowledge about the parameter distribution, because it is this distribution that is sampled to create the initial space into which the glue is applied. And this information can be obtained either by talking to experts or just the way we have done by looking at the DSAT database, which has these values in it. And the glue method gives both the errors in the coefficient as well as the variance in the output variables. And this becomes very crucial, for example, in things like climate forecast applications, where you want to be able to differentiate errors between the genetic coefficients or input parameters and the errors in the climate forecast. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.